Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 150 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, we have Scott Diedenbach back to talk about the new rules that the UCI, every year, they update the rules and regulations for cyclocross. They have done that again. It usually happens right around July, which is right around the corner. And we're going to go through the changes with Scott, who's right here. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bill. What's going on? It's an honor to be part of the sesquicentennial.
Whoa.
The sesquicentennial show, man.
Yeah. 150. That's big words for the first minute 30 of the program.
We do this every year. It's really cool. I love this part when we get these rules changes.
And I did. Yeah.
I gotta say, props to the UCI for making it easy to determine what is new by putting it in red. Could you imagine if it wasn't in red, how difficult this would be to fish this stuff out of here?
Oh, for sure. And they even you know, take into consideration people who may just have, you know, like the old monochromatic green screens, in that they also send you a memorandum that has all of those changes sort of pulled out. But yeah, it's wonderful to have all the nice big bold red changes and strike throughs. The strike throughs I like too. They don't just like disappear language. You know what has changed from last year to this year. So in this instance, in this regard, Scott, we can say kudos to the UCI.
Absolutely.
It has to be, you know, every once in a while, if for nothing else, for their organization of their rules documents, we can give them a thumbs up, and then we can like trash them for everything else.
now we let the trashing begin, right?
Exactly.
Speaking of trashing, though, Bill, I got to trash myself. I have a goal on this show.
Okay.
It's to not laugh as much.
Oh,
I listened to our last show, and I'm like, why am I laughing at every single thing in here?
We used to get the so much cackling, and I figured that was
right. It's partly just because you don't realize the mic picks up every little thing, noise you make, right? It's picked up by the mic, so it's not like a big laugh, but it sounds like more of a laugh on the recording. So, yeah, I was listening to last time, going, "Oh man."
You know what? Instead of laughing, Scott.
Yes.
You know what you should do?
What's that?
You should whoop.
Whoop.
How's that for a transition? Whoop. Was that the segue of the day?
That was beautiful.
I'm pretty proud.
I have a tear in my eye.
One of the sponsors for the Wide Angle Podium Network and also for this show is Whoop. And we are stoked to have them aboard. I'm actually still waiting patiently. I'm hoping like in the next day or so I'm going to get my brand new 3.0 strap from Whoop, because I'm going to tell you, I did this. I used the discount code CXHairs and signed up for a year, and it was a 15% discount, which was a pretty good chunk of change that I did not have to pay for that year subscription. And I am really looking forward to seeing. I mean, my biggest thing is I don't get enough sleep. So I'm hoping that through the monitoring, through the Whoop strap, that I'll be able to get a better idea of how much sleep I'm getting, how much sleep I need, you know, the strain that my body's going through, what I need for recovery. You know, I'm not a professional athlete, but these things I think still are important for anybody who does any kind of activity, who's trying to improve, wants to improve their performance, even at the low level that I am. It's huge, and I think that Whoop's gonna be a big tool in my gear kit for this.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how it's gonna handle all your time zone changes.
Yeah,
you travel enough that, I mean, you're crossing time zones all the time, Bill. So that definitely affects your rest and sleep and recovery and stuff. So that's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, flying out to Carson City, Nevada. Get to go see our, hopefully gets to see some of our friends in Reno, if only briefly, since the next Epic Rides is in Carson City. So I'll be flying into Reno. So awesome. Back out there tomorrow for the weekend, which will be a good trip. It's been, God, I've been home for almost, no, I haven't. I was going to say I was home for 3 weeks, but then I spent last week in Hagerstown, Maryland for doing a little road nationals. So that was fun. But I almost think of that as like a local trip. It's only like 90 minutes from my house. But
did you stop at any Civil War stuff in Hagerstown?
No, but it's right there. I mean, it's there. It's the club that really was responsible for bringing those national championships is the Antietam Velo Club.
Yeah,
it's
awesome.
Do you go with Antietam or Sharp?
I go back and forth.
Okay.
Most of the time I say Antietam. Antietam is more the northern way to refer to that battle, and right. Sharpsburg is more of the southern way, but I go back and forth.
Yeah.
Because that makes you sound like you really know what you're talking about, too.
Exactly.
Same thing with Manassas and Bull Run. I mean,
yeah.
you really sound like you know what you're talking about. Yep. How did we get onto this?
I don't know, but yeah. It's good. And the bottom line here is, use the code CXHAIRS, CXHAIRS at whoop.com. Sign up for a subscription of either 12 or 18 months, and you get a 15% discount, and they will send you your Whoop Strap 3.0, which includes upgrades to hardware, unlocks a suite of new software features in the Whoop app that you'll have on your phone. And the coolest part of it, I know the Slow Ride guys were on this, but I will back them up on it. Right now, as I look to my left, my Apple Watch is charging just to make sure that it lasts the entire day. The Whoop Strap, 5 days of battery life.
Wow.
That's pretty great.
Good. Yeah. And if you listen to our show this week, Bill, people can hear about how I saw one of these in the wild, which was very cool.
Yeah, so on a mechanic. And those guys are putting in the work.
What do mechanics need to recover from?
Wrenching all day. You don't belittle your occupation that you always say you're quitting.
It's 9 o'clock in the morning, and I've already been working on a bike. Are you ready for this, Bill?
Yes.
I know you're not tech crazy, but I was working on the old time mechanics will appreciate this. I was working on a Cotard crank this morning.
Nice.
I was removing cotter pins from a crank, which I don't do very often, but if you have there's a couple good tools. If you have one of those, it's way easier than just using a hammer.
Did you need a spanner?
I always need a spanner. but no, the tools that are specifically for that are, the problem is they're really expensive and you hardly ever need them anymore. So if anyone ever needs to borrow it, let me know.
Here's my tech milestone. I think that I may have. Yesterday, I went got my road bike out. Mm. I just replaced the chain rings, and I had some other things that were, but cleaned so I removed my cranks, cleaned everything out, re-greased everything, reinstalled
Whoa.
It. Same noise on my bottom bracket. So right. I think that, and this is a bottom bracket I have swapped, it's basically I'm scared to ride this bike in the rain.
Yeah.
So I think that I am finally at the point where I'm going to put in the little converter thing, and this is the last official ride I will ever do on BB30, and it is one of the greatest days of my cycling life.
Well, it might not be the bottom bracket,
No, it is, because it's the same.
I'm sure you are positive.
Yes, I understand,
bracket,
and I know.
And it still might not be the bottom bracket.
I know this to be true, and I am with you on that in most instances. However, this sound in this location,
it's pretty obvious.
I've gone through this so many times with this bike. I love the bike. I love riding it, but man, that bottom bracket's the worst.
I have very few problems with BB30 on my bikes and on other bikes that I work on.
Well, maybe I'll just send it out to you.
Yeah, there you go. And I don't know why, but
I'm not alone in this.
No. Oh no, it's a common. I mean, it's everybody. I'm sure just by saying that, I'm going to get hate mail.
No, I will. People are like, well, obviously you don't know what you're doing with your bike.
You don't know how to replace it properly.
And I will not argue that.
But it's pretty straightforward.
But I'm not doing the work most all the time.
Oh, yeah, true. Your kids are doing it.
Exactly. And it'll last. I mean, I'll get a good 7 months out of it.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll just... And they're always thinking, oh, these bearings are shot. Every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's me.
Maybe it's just that I because I can just do it. I got everything I need, and replacing the bearings isn't that big a deal. I just do it and don't think it's a big deal. But to other people, that is a big deal. So maybe it's more of that.
Yeah.
Because when you do them a lot, you can get to where you can do that in minutes. You know, you can get those bearings out and new ones in, and the bearings aren't very expensive. Unless you get like ceramic or something crazy.
No. I had the Hawk ones in there last time. They told me those were going to be, you know.
They lasted 7 months and a week.
Yeah. Yeah. They're better in the weather. Yeah. But, you know, I need to ride those, Scott. Because by riding and by being active and having my Whoop strap on, it means that, man, that came out wrong.
It means you get better life insurance rates, I bet.
It does. God, we are just right there, just on point.
It's Scott almost Divac. Like I have to go through this exact same thing myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you know where I'm going to go to get that life insurance?
I'm going to guess healthiq.com.
Yes, and because...
/WAP.
Yes, and because I now will have my perfectly working bike after I get rid of that damn BB30, it means that I'm going to be active, and they are going to say, hey, you're a guy who's in shape. We want to insure you because you're a better risk for us, which means that we can get lower rates for you. And that's the whole point of Health IQ. They are not using the traditional methods of determining who is a good risk and who isn't, based just on sedentary people. They understand that active people are a better risk. That's who they want to focus on, and that's why they came to the Wide Angle Podium and said, hey, you all talk to a lot of people who sort of fall into our demographics. Go tell them that we are the place they need for good deals in life insurance, and that's what we're doing. As we said, healthiq.com/WAP. We're not in competition with each other. It's not Bike Shop CX versus a Cyclocross Radio. We're all
not like the old days.
Not like the old days. We're all on the same page here. healthiq.com/WAP. You've heard the spiel before. You know, replacing LDL-HDL ratio with triglyceride to HDL ratio for low-carb paleo dieters. They're looking at that. You're not getting dinged for that. You're not getting dinged for having a low heart rate. You're not getting dinged for having a high BMI. They replace BMI with waist-to-hip ratio. All of these things mean that you are getting better deals on life insurance. You know, we talk about being adults. We talk about this being the time of life that this is... This is where it's important to get this stuff done. So if I know you've heard Scott give this spiel, you've heard me, you've heard it on every show. What we need just each time is one of you all who are thinking, yeah, I'll get to it. Just do it. Go take the quiz, put in the code, go through all the information, see if it's for you, and go from there. By doing that, and we just need, you know, just one or two volunteers each time to do that, then they will keep continuing to come back and say, hey, Wide Angle Podium, that's where we want to be advertising, because their listeners get it. And
you're driving people to their site.
Driving people to their site. It is a win-win in that instance. So healthiq.com/WAP. Scott, let's talk about some cyclocross rules.
All right, I'm ready.
Okay.
Where do we want to start?
Let's start from chapter one. For all of you following at home, you can go to the UCI site. I'll put a link in the show notes to where these can find, but cyclocross is always part five. You know, this should be like the new rule five, just the cyclocross rules.
Right, yeah.
Updated.
And let's, you know,
Yeah.
A lot of these rules this year address the new junior women's category, right?
Yeah, a lot of the
changes are simply the addition of and junior women or something like that, because they're just kind of including that in all these statements that have been there. So
yeah,
that was a big part of it this year.
The really in the weeds things, I think that we will have fun talking about. There is some timing things. I think the things that interest me or kind of interesting. One interesting change is, you know what, we have a change to the planks rule, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
The one that I don't think people will pay a lot of attention to, but for somebody like me and for all of the photographers out there who cover the races, is sort of an interesting change that I want them to go even farther, which is when podiums happen, and we'll get to that as well.
Oh, but yes.
That's something that doesn't come up a lot when we talk about these rules, so I want to make sure that we get to it this time around.
There is an interesting thing in that. That's good.
Yeah. 5.1.001, right at the beginning. We're just really getting the ages that are now racing in UCI events for the men, the men's junior. They're just making sure that everybody knows the age ranges. So men's juniors comprise riders aged 17 to 18. Men's U23 is riders 19 to 22. And then the elites are 23 and above. If you are under 17, you can't race. If you're over 17 and you want to race in the elite race, I think you can. Just not in the national championship or I think the worlds too. Well, that wouldn't make sense. But yeah. You can go up, but you can't, you know, race under 17.
Yeah. And then 17 you can race if you meet some other criteria.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the women, the biggest change is that they added the women's juniors, same deal, 17 to 18. I think do you know what the change was for the U23, or is it just because it must have just been 19
I think
and above
it, well,
before?
I think it went down because there was no junior category.
Right.
It might have said 17.
Got it. I think you're right. Yeah. So now it's 19 to 22, and then
right,
women's elite riders of 23. And
yeah, it's
above.
The same as the men, which is how it should be.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's good.
And then the one thing is that juniors, U23s, and elites can all ride in the same race. That is still there, other than if it's a continental, national, or world championship.
Right.
Which means, and this is a big point, that we now have a junior national championship race, correct?
Women's. I mean, that's what it sounds like, yes.
And
for sure. I mean, because there's only three races really where there will be junior women separated out completely, right? And I think that's coming up later in the rules, but it's nationals, continental, and worlds.
Yeah.
So yeah, there will definitely
which takes care of a huge issue that we had in the U.S. where we wanted the junior women, always wanted the junior women to have their own standalone race, so we didn't have Katie Klaus, you know, coming in second or third in the U23 race, yet winning the junior race, yet it really wasn't a race. So, you know, that whole confusion is now gone since it's separate. And the reason that it had to be that way, and this was not a USA Cycling issue, they were trying to do what was best for the riders, it was a UCI issue, is that if you had that separate junior women's category, they would be penalized when it came to worlds because they would not gain any UCI points that they would have gained in the U23 race and therefore been farther back in the grid if they were then to make the worlds team. Now that there is a junior women's worlds race, it's no longer an issue. You're going to be earning points for that women's junior race exclusively, so that we can now have a separate Nationals race, and it's no longer an issue. So that's a huge point that starts this year. That is a positive development.
Absolutely. You know, we were all wondering about that. Why would the juniors women should have their own race? But then when you realize why it was that way, it makes perfect sense, because you don't want to penalize them going into worlds with no points. Now that's just solved. They're their own race for nationals and for worlds. So that all flushes out. So that's good. Very good. I like it.
Yeah, the next big point, Scott, maybe if you want to take this one, is a thing that we are dealing with up close and personally this year in the U.S. It is they mm-hmm. have really added more details to the rule about what you need to do to be a UCI C1 race. The rule that was put in place and for races for this upcoming season always existed, but it was never enforced until they decided, just really out of the blue, to enforce it this year. And that's why the U.S. lost most of its C1 races. But now that, since this seems to be a point of emphasis, they have added a lot more language to what makes up a C1 race versus a C2 race, if you want to go through those details.
Yeah, so it's under, it's 5.1.004, and it's titled calendar, which is a little weird. I don't know why, but yeah, and like they're kind of the basic stuff that's always been there, and then the red for the changes starts. And one of the things right at the beginning, it says, however, an event will only be given, and then in red, or maintained in class one status if the previous season's race had at least 10 foreign starters representing at least 5 different nationalities. And that's the part we've known before and kind of been talking about some in the past. And then also in red, to clarify, because I know we've been talking about this before, Bill, and wondered about this, it says these numbers being calculated cumulatively, so that's really good, with the official start lists for the men elite, women, and when appropriate, men under 23 races. So that answers the question that you don't need that in, say, your men's elite or your women's elite. It's just in total, you have to have 5 countries represented with at least 10 starters. So that's good.
Yeah, and you look at the races who did that. Rochester easily did that. I mean, one, they are an easy commute for Canadian riders, plus they are normally right before the World Cup, so you always have riders coming over from Europe and participating in those races. And then also it's early season enough that we have these kind of U.S. Residents who have international licenses, who are going to be in much more demand this year if people want to become or even maintain their C1 status, who will show up mm-hmm. to these races too. So they were able to do it. Cincy, I think, really, they had no problem making that number. Jingle Cross easily makes it because they have all the World Cup riders there, so that's not an issue at all. They're well over that number, but Those really were the only three. Other races such as Charm City, who I know have met those numbers in the past but did not meet it this past season, they didn't know. They did not know until they put in their inscription and the calendar was put together and they saw that they were a C2. That was really the first that was known. And at that time, there's this word derogation that is throughout this thing, and derogation basically is, we're going to give you a pass this year because, you know, we want you to work towards this, and then we'll go from there. And that's the U.S. for our scene to grow it in the years past with certain things have gotten derogations, and we were assured that we would be getting derogations this year for our previous C1 races. Turns out not the case. And they are, for the most part, all gone. And if you go back and listen to Scott and I talking a couple weeks ago, that my hand wringing over that and what the season is going to look like. But that's,
and wasn't Charm City like the next race after this rule came out? I mean, they had like 2 weeks notice. Like, what were they going to do about it? Right? It was like they were like the very next race. Whereas I think since he had at least a few weeks, maybe they could do something to encourage riders to get there, you know, from other places. But I don't know that they had to. But Charm City really kind of got a real rough deal there because they had like a week or two to try and make some kind of change. And it's like, yeah, that's, you're not going to be able to do it that quickly. So I think if any place the word derogation applied, it was for Charm City, and then it didn't happen. So.
Yeah. I mean, we have a Belgian announcer there every year that gets flown over. I wonder if Thomas right. can count into those numbers. The other thing, Scott, that, you know, maybe you can go through a little bit is, which I know is our first really, or second after the C1's hot button item, is, you know, a couple things here. There's a separate women's junior race cannot occur in any UCI races, and that's, I think that's coming, but that's not there. But what can occur or has to occur at every UCI, be it C1 or C2 race this year?
That is, you have to have an elite men's race. Yep. Am I right? Okay, here's another thing, Bill. I got to get this off my chest right now. Even if it's for nothing other than optics, the UCI needs to stop saying men's elite and women.
I agree.
They need to either say men's elite and women's elite, or just say men and women.
Right.
If for no other reason other than optics, they need to stop that. So, anyways,
it's like when people get the apostrophe S wrong when they're saying two different groups or two different things possess
yes.
something. Like it's
yes.
Bill. You don't say it's Bill and Scott's dog. You are technically supposed to say it's Bill's and Scott's
and Scott's
dog. That's right. The same thing. The elite doesn't carry over from one to the other. You have to put it in front of each one.
Yes. It's so elite men, elite women, and junior men.
That's the one.
So why do you not have to have junior women?
I think that it is coming, and I think that as horrible as it is that it's not there, it is something that as UCI organizers, we're all going to have to figure out how to do this. I don't think it'll be a huge issue for us the way we run our UCI races. I know just looking at the issue that the junior men's races are causing, especially in New England, that it's going to be even more of an issue. And when I, you know, when we were told this in the UCI race organizers meeting that took place in Louisville on the Monday after national championships, we were at that time informed that we were going to have this junior men's race as part of our calendar for the day, our race schedule, and it was okay. And then the big caveat in that is that it did not have to be a standalone race, and that's huge, especially in the U.S.
Yes.
where all of our money to support these races comes from all of you wonderful people who come out and pay a registration fee and
participate.
Race. Participate. Yeah. We want everybody to participate. And if we were told that we had to have an additional, I believe there are 40-minute races, an additional 40-minute junior men's race, standalone race, they are the only ones on the course, especially in these later season races where daylight is at a premium, that was going to cause a huge issue, and it was going to mean that some of our amateur racers were not going to be able to race, or we're going to be stuffed in, you know, we already have like multiple categories going off at the same time. It was going to be even more of that, smushing more people into the race at the same time. And if you have a race, you know, like DCCX, like all of the New England races, like Charm City, where we're already sold out at 125 or 150 people in a field, there's no room for them. And that's already not an ideal experience.
Right.
And if you send even more people in there, it gets even worse. But for us, Mid-Atlantic, it's something that we can deal with because we've always had staggered starts. So our U19 race always was a staggered start with our Masters field. And so it's like, okay, well, we can handle this. We'll be able to do this junior men's race, and it won't be that huge of an issue. Where it is an issue is in the Vittoria series in New England. And I didn't grasp this at first until I saw how really annoyed Adam Meyerson was over this, because I think he had in his mind that they could still all start at the same time, and now being told that they can't. They have this unique racing experience, which is really a good thing for our top level juniors, in that they get thrown to the wolves. They are put on the same line by cross results with the fastest masters men. And I remember stories of Chris Auer, sending up from some of the 2020 riders up to race in New England, and them just sort of the first time they did it, just being petrified, lining up to basically these dudes that were, almost twice their size, who were racing super aggressive, and just the fear in these kids' eyes, who are good racers, fast racers, but just not used to that intensity and that strength. And it turned out to be this great experience. I think Chris's advice to them was like, get your elbows out and fight like hell. And that was
so. I mean, yeah. And so, as far as like preparing for bigger races, both in the U.S. and in Europe, that is a beneficial experience to have,
right? And I think the frustration that Adam and other race organizers in New England are having now, who put on UCI races, is that they can no longer do that. And even more frustrating, and this is going to be an issue for us as well, is in the rules it says that if the junior UCI junior men are sharing the course, they must be the first wave.
Yeah, so just to clarify, in case people are confused, they can be on the course with the masters, but they have to have their own start time specific. So you have to start them first, right? So you have to start the juniors, and then if you're going to have masters on the course at the same time, they have to be the second group to start.
Yeah.
Am I right, Bill?
Yeah, no, that's correct. And I think that if you are in Belgium and you have your 17 and 18 year old racers, and for whatever reason you're at a race that you have another field behind them, it's not going to be an issue if they go off first, right? They're going to be blasting ahead of those dudes, and they're never going to get in each other's way.
Yeah.
The problem that we have in the U.S. is we have the way the development works here, it's a little different, and we have a wider range of juniors who aspire to be UCI racers, and they're not faster than the masters racers, and they're going to get caught, and it's just going to cause all kinds of chaos at the front of that masters race, which we've already know is talked about is a super intense and aggressive race. So I don't know.
And you're not having the fast masters racing with the fast juniors. You're having the faster masters going riding into the back of the junior field, which is going to be the slower juniors.
Yep.
And likewise, you could have by the end of the race, the fast juniors riding into the back of the slower masters. So that just causes confusion and chaos for everybody.
Yeah, and
instead of just the faster riders being with the faster riders and the slower riders being with the slower riders, you kind of create this mix that can become confusing and even kind of dangerous a little bit in some instances. So, I mean, I understand the point. I think it's a legit point.
Yeah. And we could talk about this for hours about where these junior men are better suited, where they could race. But, if you even move them down to like the Cat 4 or the Cat 5 race, and you're having the same issues, except it's that this UCI race is going to be right up on the back of a Cat 4 or a Cat 5 race, and those are the races that sell out first, and those are the biggest races, and those are the biggest ones with the widest range of abilities, where people may be racing their first race, and that's not a good experience either. So we have some work to do to accommodate this, and then you know, eventually we're going to be putting the junior women in there too and accommodating them as well. But, you know, we'll make it work. But it's definitely some growing pains for domestic races this year.
And in case people are wondering, they're like, well, why is it the juniors and not the U23? And it's because that is would be part of the elite races, both men and women. So they will just race with the elites. So you don't have to have a mandatory race for them.
Right.
And that's why. Yeah. So just to clarify.
I like this new rule of 5.1.014. When the race course is used for purposes other than holding UCI races. Shout out to the U.S. here. The organizer shall take all precautions to keep the course safe and rideable for the UCI categories.
So there's a rule. Talk about a rule with absolutely no teeth in it at all. I mean, it's completely subjective and ambiguous, right? But it's just, we're going to write this down. So
and it means like, okay, well, you can have a super dangerous course. I mean, you can put the alligator pit and the flaming planks out there for your right. for your amateur, you know, races. But once the UCI races start, we got to make sure that everything is safe. The one thing that they did here that I do like, because it's another one of these rules that in the past had been uniformly ignored in the U.S., that if the UCI came in and decided, oh, there's another rule we're going to enforce. Sorry, you all no longer get to be UCI races. And it's one that, again, goes back to what we were talking about a minute ago, would have a huge impact, especially economically, on this race. Is there used to be a rule that said a maximum of 5 events may be run on one course on the same day. Can you imagine in the U.S. if we were restricted to that?
I think that's in the strikeouts this year.
That's
isn't
what I mean.
Somewhere?
It's gone.
But what I'm saying
is that rule used to exist, yet none of us followed it.
No.
And it could have been something, another thing like this foreign rider rule that the UCI would come in and say, hey, look at this, 5.1.014, that's on the books. None of you are following it. No UCI races anymore unless you all just have, you know, I mean, it'd be nice for a promoter in that the day would be really short, but if we only had 5 races, whew.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how you would do it. You'd have to have like separate days or something.
Yeah.
You have to have like Saturday would be non-UCI, Sunday would be UCI or something like that.
Yeah, or even just different categories. You only race once a weekend and have different categories on Saturday and different categories on Sunday and then the UCI
something.
Both days.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
This is the big one, 5.1.024. Scott, what do we got?
Wait, what is it? 5.1.024 is... Okay, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4. It's only 5 words that are changed. And it's causing the biggest ripple in the whole thing here. So the beginning of that rule starts. The course may include a single section of planks. This obstacle must consist of 2 planks placed minimum 4 meters and maximum 6 meters apart. And now here's the different part, placed on a straight section. Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah.
What does that mean, Bill?
It means no more turns, no more 180s, no more, you know, chicanes in your planks. You got to be like, straight line between plank A and plank B.
Yeah. And the biggest place I think I mentioned where this popped into my head was how DeVue used to have those planks on that curve. And the sad part about it is, Bill, that used to be, do you remember when going there would be a huge crowd right there, right? And it wasn't dangerous. There was very few crashes there, no more than any other plank section, I would say. But it was a huge spectator attraction, right? Everybody came to that spot to watch that curved plank section. So it's kind of too bad in that regard, I think.
I saw one response on Twitter that, you know, the reason they thought they did that was that they had those big turns in there to start with was to reduce people riding the planks. But we can attest that DeVue, that didn't slow down.
No, you know. Everyone still seemed to ride it.
Still riding those, so I don't think that would have done it. It's one of those things that I jokingly, you know, it doesn't. And here's the thing: if you're putting on a local race, this is not a USA Cycling rule, so you can still do this. You can still have your U-turn with a plank on either side of the tree that you're U-turning around. For me, I almost jokingly want it to be banned for local races too, because at least in the Mid-Atlantic, it's like, I think one race did that maybe 8 or 10 years ago, and then that seemed to be the norm. Like every race
that became the pinwheel.
Yeah, every race had to have these curvy.
Everybody had to have a pinwheel.
You know, right? It was, you know, we when I was race organizer for this race Hyattsville in the Mid-Atlantic years and years and years ago, you know, part of what we used to joke about was like, we have actual fast planks, like the one plank section in the Mid-Atlantic where you could actually get speed up to go over them, because that just didn't exist. Everything else was like this huge, you know, tricky curved section and everything else, and we were like, yep, just get up there. If you can ride them, but you're gonna have to take them at speed. So
yeah,
I think that's all that's going on here. It's really not that big of a deal. What I will say, though, but this sort of brings up a bigger issue just about planks. And if people want to know why I use the word planks, that's because it's right here. It's in the rules. It doesn't say barriers.
It's the word they use.
Barriers are the metal things that go on the side of the course that keep the people out.
Yep.
Planks are the things that you go over. What I will say about planks is that when we grew up in this sport, it was the biggest deal. You went to cyclocross practice and you learned how to dismount your bike and you learned how to carry it over planks, and then you learned how to remount your bike, and you would spend, say, 75% of your practice just on that skill.
Right.
I think
now everyone just rides
it. Now everyone rides it, but I think also as the sport has evolved and has the art of building a cyclocross track has evolved, the need for planks is less and less. And if you didn't have them, and there are many races that don't, I don't think it takes away from your race at all. I think it's one of these things that if you really look at it closely, you can have it in there, but it's not, it's one of these things, like, you know, especially in the US, we're like, well, if we're at cyclocross, we have to have some Belgian theme, which is kind of silly. It's like, we're cyclocross, we have to have planks. You don't have to. And you can have an amazing course. We've seen world championships like that, some of the best World Cups like that. If your track is hard enough, you don't have to have those in there.
I agree. I think, you know, and in a way, things like stairs have kind of replaced, stairs or a flyover with stairs have kind of replaced the planks as the place where you can force riders to have to carry their bike, where planks used to do that and they just kind of don't anymore. But just using I think you're right. Course design has evolved to the point where just using natural terrain, they've come up with ways to force people off their bikes and to carry their bikes. And I think that's what they're trying to do, is find places where, how can we make sure they're still running in this, right? We still want to keep it cyclocross. We don't just want it to be a dirt crit. So, I think that's kind of evolved that way. So, but I agree. We don't just throw planks in to throw planks in.
We're going to skip over, not really skip too far down, Scott, but what I want to talk about is the event procedure, which is 5.1.043. And down in that B section, if you want to talk about it, because I think that is a huge change that is going to have a big, big effect on U.S. riders.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, how previously you were called up based on your UCI points, which meant
for
you
World
could get
Cups.
Points.
We're talking about World Cups, I'm sorry.
Right, right. But now it's changed where it'll be based on World Cup points. So part B of that section, which you mentioned, Bill, is 5.1.043. The first 24 riders of the most recently published UCI Cyclocross World Cup standings of the current season. So that's going to be the call up, the first thing in the call up. This point is not applicable for the first UCI World Cup round of the season. In that instance, you go to the second point, which where it says, as per the most recently published UCI cyclocross individual classification of the current season.
So that'll be
the final classification of the previous season.
So Jingle Cross will be old school.
Right, right. Hang on. So yeah, that'll be the last the last one until next season. Yeah, just to get points on the board, right? And then once everyone has some World Cup points, it'll then number one comes into play ahead of that. So,
that's first three rows are going to be ranked by UCI World Cup rankings. After that, then starting on row four, it'll be highest ranked UCI points.
UCI points, right.
So
UCI points still matter, just, you know, the best you can ever do with just UCI points is fourth row.
You know, so we had these instances, and this is, you know, was a criticism for these riders, but this is how the system was built, is you would have riders like Jeremy Powers and Stephen Hyde and Kerry Werner last year who were in the first row or in the second row because they had awesome seasons in the U.S. domestically and were raking up a lot of points, especially when we had all those C1 races, and they were ranked high in the UCI rankings, yet in their World Cup performances, they may not have done as well. So if we were to look back right in the last couple of years and seen where their ranking was in the World Cups, it is significantly lower than what their rankings would have been in just overall UCI points. That has now been addressed. So those riders in those situations no longer will be in those first three rows unless they've earned it, but would start in the fourth row.
Do you like this rule overall?
I
think this is a good rule. I think it's totally legit, and I think there was a good point with the fact that because not all UCI races are equal, not all World Cups are equal either. I get that, but they tend to be more equal than just UCI races that are all over the world on any given week, you know. So I think it's a good change for sure. And it makes it like other cycling disciplines, right? That's how mountain bike is,
that's
right?
Correct.
Yeah.
That's
so,
correct.
So yeah, I think that's the way it should be.
All right. The other, just sort of skimming down here since I don't want us to go too far over our hour. The new,
we never do that.
When we have our junior women's races in the Pan Ams, which will happen, or the continental races, and then also nationals and the world championships, those races will be 40 minutes long. That's the same duration.
Same as the junior men.
Junior men. Just as in the past, just to reiterate it, 50 minutes for the men's U23, 40 minutes for the women's U23. I'm going to argue right here, much to the chagrin of some people, those should be the same, 50 minutes for both.
I agree.
60 minutes for the men's elite race. And for this is the wording. We always talk about the wording, and we want to, you know, and there's some confusion because we'll get to the elite women. Elite women have their own special rule, but for all of these other, every other category, the rule is as close as possible to. So
right,
if you end up with a 36 minute race, that's legit. And it's supposed to be 40 minutes. If that's as close as possible to 40 minutes, then that is what it is. And there's no rule basis for complaining. There's just, you know, fairness, you can complain that, right, or the officials got it wrong, but that still falls in the rule. If the men race 52 minutes or they race an hour and 10 minutes and that's just how it plays out, that's all within the rule.
Mm-hmm.
When we get to the women elite racers, the rule has not changed, and the rule, just to reiterate it since we sort of have to go through this every year, it's not as close as possible, must. The word must is used. Must be between 40 and 50 minutes.
So 38 is not between that, is
correct.
It?
Correct. In those instances,
it's not as close as possible. Nope. It's must.
They have not followed their rules. And you, it's you and I are going to defer to officials all the time because we know enough of them in the U.S. and know as hard as that as they work and as much crap as they take for not very much pay. Somehow they actually do it because they love doing it and want to give back to the sport, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But in this instance, they have a 10-minute buffer to get it right. And at the UCI level, you're supposed to be getting your A officials who know what they're doing. They should be able to nail that.
Yeah. Was there any race last year where the women were doing over 10-minute laps?
I don't think so. And was there any, I don't know if there was any that came in over 50 minutes. If anything, and that's sort of the issue is that it always seems to err on not long enough.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, if you're seeing that, at lap X, they're going to finish in 38 or around 38. Well, obviously, if you add one more to that, you're going to be within 40 and 50. That gives you 12 minutes of time that there's no way they're running 12 minute laps. So obviously those are races say where you should be adding an extra lap. And I totally agree with you. It's always an error on the short side for some reason.
I will once again lobby for here's how I'll set it up. Makes the rules much, much easier. You just get rid of all that language.
Totally agree with you.
40 minutes for junior races, 50 minutes for everything else.
Everything else. Done. I agree. It's a better race. It's better than a 60-minute race.
Here's one that I like.
Yes.
The women juniors don't get thrown in first.
Yes. That is cool. That's order of events.
Yeah, order of events for how we sort of know the UCI normally to work. I was a little surprised. So what do we got here, Scott?
So the order is first is junior men. Second is junior women when appropriate. That's if you're having that event. Third, men under 23. Fourth, women, which should say women elite. And fifth is men elite. So there you go. But where's women 23? U23?
Still not there. They're still in with the women.
Okay.
And there it is. There when they put little numbers, it's so freaking stark when they go women, number 4, 5, men, elite.
Men, elite. That's what I'm saying. If for no other reason other than optics, you need to change that. Either way, either take the elite off the men or add it to the women.
Yeah.
And then it continues in the next sentence. It's like the women and men elite races must be organized as standalone races.
Which I guess means as we talked about, all those other fields can have other racers on there at the same time. Here's the one I want to take a minute on that I think normally would get overlooked.
Are you talking about 5.1.054?
I am. The official ceremony.
Yeah.
The old language, and again, this is what Scott was talking about, where it's so nice when we get these strikeouts. So this is the old language said, the official ceremony shall take place immediately after the last rider has finished and shall take no longer than 10 minutes. And there's going to be two official ceremonies here. This is just for the general UCI races, and I think they're going to have, there's one later on that's either World Cup or World Championships, which that change I like a lot better. This change I don't really care about, except it needs to be completely different. But the new rule says the official ceremony shall take place as soon as possible and no later than 15 minutes after the finish of the first rider.
Yeah.
The effect of, and some of the races in the U.S. do not follow this, and I am in favor of them not following it. And what they do is they hold their men's elite and their women's elite UCI podiums until the end of the day. And then they have both of those groups together. And it was kind of interesting at Go Cross where they flip-flop men's and women's, and then told the men that they have to wait until the end of the women's race, and they were like, we want to do it now. And my thought was, now you know what the women have to sit through every weekend and wait until you guys are done racing, and then you do them together. I what the issue becomes is that at the smaller UCI events, if you have one photographer covering the event, or in my case, one videographer, by following this rule, and the as we talked about before, there are so many races throughout the day, and the race organizer has to squeeze this schedule so tight to make sure they get everything in before it gets dark, you really don't have much wiggle room. What will end up happening is that the men's race will start, and then they will do the women's podium. And that's kind of what they have to do to follow this rule, and it stinks. It means that women's podium does not get the coverage that it deserves. It means that you can't go where you, what you would normally do, and is much easier after the men's race, go up, find the winner, have a quick interview, figure, you know, while they're in the moment, while the race just happened, where you get that great emotion and you get those great quotes from people. You are robbed of that because you have to go cover the other race. You know, it's either why weren't you there for the start? Why didn't you get that first lap where a lot of things happen? Because I was talking to the women's winner, completely missed that. So what I would like, here would be my plea to UCI race organizers in the US, budget that time after the women's race, if that's what you're running first, to have that time to have your podium presentation. I think, you know, you can grab those first three as long as it's, you know, there's not going to be a protest, and you can have that podium presentation. We can get our photos, we can get a quick sound bite, and then just back up that start by like 10 minutes, and then we can still get to the start. And that would be huge.
Do you think there's going to be a problem that they got rid of the it can't take longer than 10 minutes part?
I just think, you know, when I read that one, it was, I'm sort of like keying in on this other change that'll come up in a little while. For this change, I don't think it matters either way. I think it's, what I do like is that in the first one, they were like immediately after the last rider, and now we don't have to wait until the last rider. So you can do it faster. You can basically pull the first three, let them, you know, gather themselves, clean up, and go straight to the podium. And I know the riders would prefer that too.
Sure.
But all I'm asking is that the organizers take that into consideration in their schedule. Say this is podium. Podium presentation is between, you know, 3:45 and 4 p.m. We start the men's race at 4 p.m. instead of, and know that that's going to happen instead of it happening. And you don't want to do, especially you only have one announcer, they're going to have to call the beginning of the race after staging and then go back and do the podiums. That's normally what happens. It gets pushed back until after the race has started. Do everything, get everything done before the next race starts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. They were thinking about, yeah.
It's in the weeds, but... All right. Keeping rolling down. You tell me if something catches your fancy as we continue to roll through here.
Like we said, a lot of it is just throwing. It's just the addition of and women junior into a rule just to get them going on the rules.
One interesting thing that was knocked out of here in accordance with Article 1. This is all a strikeout. This no longer applies. Article 1.3.059, all riders in the men U23 and men's junior categories must wear national team clothing for a World Cup. So that's good. You just wear your trade team kit, which is important.
Yep. That's gonna be kind of cool, actually.
Yeah,
I like that. Yeah.
Okay, here's the one I like. That here's the rule that I would like to be in place for every UCI race and not every World Cup race. I found the second part that I was just talking about with the official ceremony. I'm sorry, I won't belabor this point past this. For the World Cups, this is 5.3.001, official ceremony. The old rule was the official ceremony shall be held within 5 minutes after the winner of each category finishes. I like that rule. If that's what it's going to be, that's fine. Change to the first three riders in the race and the leader of the general classification of the UCI Cyclocross World Cup must attend the podium. That's the rule I want everywhere.
Yeah.
No time, no 5 minutes, no 10 minutes, no after this rider has crossed or that rider has crossed. It's just that your top three and your leader of the series must attend the podium. It could be the next day. They got to be there.
I think you guys talked about that on Grodio, and I completely agreed with what you were saying. And I think with the way cyclists are with their schedule, if you don't tell them they got to be there, it's easy to not be there because they're busy, yep. right? It's a packed schedule. But if you tell them you got to be there for this, then they'll be there.
Yeah,
so
and this opens, I think this helps, and this opens up the door for post-event podiums.
Right.
You can have the women right. and the men podiums together, which I think is a much better... I understand.
Celebration.
Yeah, I
it's
understand
more of a,
not,
it's just a,
the
yeah,
women have to wait
it's
around.
It's an event itself.
Yeah, I understand that. And I definitely, you know that is a little more of a burden, but you're going to get much more people at that podium celebration. You're going to get much more coverage from media outlets because they have nowhere else to be. Everybody is focused just on that podium presentation. All right, Scott, I think that may have done it.
Once again, another year of rule changes in the books.
I'm sure there's something in here that our listeners will point out to us that we missed. I guarantee
that they think
it
is important.
That was important.
Yeah.
And you were right. Well, we'll know what it is once it is revealed. But you know, this was kind of a quick look. We saw got these things yesterday and just when they came out and wanted to give you all a heads up on the big changes in here. Here's what I will end on, Scott. No longer. Here's a little behind the scenes. I was chatting with Scott about this rule and I was like, did you know this even existed? And you said you didn't, but no longer will the rule exist that for each race in the World Cup in each category of the UCI Cyclocross World Cup, the UCI shall award prize money to the rider who will have recorded the fastest lap time as delivered by the timekeeping company. The prize is fixed by the UCI financial obligations. We had a fastest lap preem?
Never knew that.
I didn't either.
Never knew that. Ever. Why did no one ever
know.
Bring that up?
I would have been like all over that. I feel like I haven't done my job, and that we weren't trying to figure out who won the fastest lap preem.
That could have given us stuff to talk about for how many podcasts?
And now it's gone.
We could have done entire shows about
that.
Now
we're just back to the first.
And now it's
first
gone.
20 men.
Well, you know what we should do?
20 women get paid.
We should start talking about it now.
We could have our own award.
We'll look for the
fastest. We'll replace it. We will replace. No longer will there be a cash prize, but we will send a wide angle podium sticker pack.
There you go.
To the winner of the fastest lap.
Which, you know, could be, depending on what the prize level was before, that sticker pack could be more valuable.
That's true. Well, it is invaluable.
So,
hey, Scott.
That's right. Yeah.
If you haven't already, you need to go check out Life in the Peloton with Mitch Docker.
I have not. I've got them downloaded. I'm ready to listen. And are they in the WAP app yet?
They are in the WAP app.
I got a
WAP app.
All right.
They're in
good.
The WAP app.
Good. The WAP app. So, yeah, I'm excited. This, what a great addition to the network. And it's going to be awesome. It's just awesome. It is awesome. And, Bill, how excited are you for the Trek World Cup?
Oh, man. That we're all going to be out there? Do you know what?
We were just talking on Slack. Tim was trying to organize a Airbnb for everybody to stay together. Could you imagine? You don't plan on sleeping. I might have to sleep in the van just so that I can actually get some
Scott,
sleep. Because it's going to be...
Scott, since we are the official podcast network of the Waterloo World Cup, brought to you by Trek.
Yes.
Do you know what we can do?
What?
Oh, man. I wonder if we can get podium time for this.
Is this something you just thought of?
Yes. We can hand out the sticker pack.
We can give awards for fastest lap time.
In person.
For fastest
lap?
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
The wide angle podium fastest lap World Cup sticker packs can be delivered in person.
We got to work on that. We could give those, and Slow Ride could give the 16th place award sticker pack.
Man. They may have to come up with something different. Maybe if there are fidget spinners left.
On the official podium. Oh my god.
These professional racers are gonna want to come back to Trek every year knowing that there are these extra incentives. They're gonna be like, man, sticker packs, fidget spinners.
What?
They're racing their butts off.
And if seeing us all wasn't enough, Bill, I was just telling you about this. You know, Bike Shop CX has had very little casual wear for our viewers, right? We'll be unleashing some. This will be the only place you can get our new Bike Shop CX socks.
Whoa.
Yes. So they are limited supply, and if you don't get them, if they all get sold, they're gone. So here's another reason to come to Trek, just to buy our socks.
Can you all get branded spanners?
I'll work on that. I'll work on that. come. We're that's gonna be. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Chad Brown over there at Trek extended an invite to Lindsay Goldman, the host of the Dirtfield Recordings, who I just posted an episode with her, which is a little more somber than what we're doing here, but definitely one worth checking out. So I would request that you all go listen to the Dirtfield Recordings, because I think there's some good conversations on there. So she may be out there too, and we'll have the whole crew along with the consummate athlete folks and the gravel lot. As I said, it's gonna be fun stuff. And while you're out there, you know, you can race. We want everybody to sign up and race. You can have your Whoop 3.0 strap on while you're racing, so it's going to be recording your level of performance and strain and all that kind of stuff, and you get all of that feedback. But you should use the discount code CXHAIRS for 15% off of Whoop.
Yeah. And buy some coffee.
Buy some coffee from Grimper Brothers.
Hello, cyclocross friends.
That's it.
And the full schleck.
You gotta say it. Out. Say it. Say it like you mean it.
Hello, cyclocross friends.
That's a little better. Scott.
Yeah.
Where can people get a hold of you?
The best place is on Instagram, just at BikeShopCX. I am on Twitter at BikeShopCX as well. But either one of those places is fine. Or send your tech questions to the BikeShopCX show at BikeShopShow@gmail.com.
Scott, we didn't even talk about the parts bin.
Tell me what that is.
The parts bin. It's our little testing ground for shows that may someday have their own feed but don't yet. So for instance, super rookie Tim and I put out a Sport Ballers show where we were talking about the NBA and the NHL and just sports. And then Zach Schuster and myself from Cyclocross Magazine, we're doing the Grodio show, which is awesome. We we have to plan to get episode 4 for that recorded and up. And then you, Scott, you have your own show in the parts bin.
Yeah, and episode 2 of that is coming. We're working at. We had a little bit of a delay because of a little bit of a mix-up in getting some vinyl to the guy who's going to be on the show with me, but that has been settled or straightened out, so we're ready to do episode 2 of the Hazy Vinyl Jive, where we talk about vinyl records and why you should be listening to music on vinyl and why we love vinyl. So, yourself included, Bill, you're a vinyl guy.
Yeah. Right? For sure. To the point, I will share this. I saw the band Sleep a couple weeks ago with my wife, and it was an amazing show. And here's where my vinyl nerddom has gotten to, Scott. I already own the vinyl of their latest album, but I bought the tour edition.
Nice. And
also on vinyl, and it just is sitting in the back. I looked at it, I was like, I want this, and I just put it there, and I haven't opened it.
You haven't even broken the seal yet.
I haven't even broken the seal. It's just sitting there. I looked on Discogs, and I was like, all right. And you know what? I'll never sell it. But I look at Discogs, and I go, I already made $50.
I had that happen to me the other day. I was at a flea market and bought a bought a jazz record, a Duke Ellington record, for $7, which was, you know, everything. Most of the stuff in this thing was $2 and $3, but this one was marked up at $7.
Yeah.
I came home. I thought it was worth more than that. Plugged it into Discogs. There was 5 people selling it anywhere. That's all that was, you know, that's all that it was being sold. The lowest of the 5 had it listed for $100.
Damn.
I was like, boom.
And
the highest one was like 175. Yeah, I was like, ooh, score. So, nice. Yeah, that's also what's fun. It's the only way you can collect music where it retains value.
Right.
Where it retains monetary value.
Yeah.
So there.
So you're telling me these 1,000 CDs in my garage?
Well, they can have sentimental value. Yeah. But yeah, no one will give you much for your CDs, and they'll give you even less for your MP3 collection. That's for sure.
That is very true. That is a good point. That is very true.
And no one ever asks to see your MP3s, do they?
No. I mean, I have them all stored above my sunblocker in my car, the visor.
Yeah.
That's right. You pull down that visor, all the MP3s just fall right out from it.
But you bust out some vinyl records and people are like, oh, can I look at that? Can I open it? Yeah, yeah. Go check it out, man.
Very cool.
That's all just right. Part of what we talk about. So.
I think we did it.
Yay, us.
Yay, us. Cyclocross, it's I don't know if it's officially coming, but man, it's just, it's barreling towards us.
But cyclocross season is coming.
Yes.
That's for sure.
For sure.
Yes.
And we will be there soon enough.
Can't wait.
All right. Till next time, Scott. Oh,
later, Bill. Yeah.
I should tell we're feedback at cxairs.com and then also at cxairs on Twitter and Instagram. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right, Bill. Take care.